Honey, I blew up the business.
Welcome to the podcast, my good buddy, Ian Hambleton. Nice to see you, Guy. How's it going?
Very good, thank you. Not bad.
Well, Ian is a good pal of mine. I'm going to tell that up front in case anybody wonders. He does have a friend. And I've known him since the 90s. And I was reflecting on the amount of time we've known each other, and it's been a long time. And I've actually known him since the time he was a nightclub promoter in Nottingham back in the day.
Which is probably, you know, started my career as it went, carried on, right? It's just in different guises now. So
yeah. Well, this is what I was thinking. And I remember actually popping up at one of your do's, DJing in the UK garage room at Nottingham University.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was back in the day. And I was remembering how we, when I used to go onto Facebook, how we used to regularly troll each other on social media.
I don't think I trolled you back. I think it was just you.
Yeah, well, I remember you trolling me back. I was very hurt.
Which is why
it hurts me to admit that this guy has got the most incredible CV and career as a creative entrepreneur. Since the time promoting nightclubs in Nottingham, Ian's gone on to kind of be, I would argue, and I'm saying this, and it does pay me to say this, as one of the leading lights of the UK creative industry. He is a real champion of that sector. And his company, Studio Output, which was founded in 2002, has grown over that time to be one of the leading independent design studios, working with people like the BBC, Sony PlayStation, the Ministry of Sound, MTV, amongst many, many more, including Harry Potter. Woo!
Yeah, that's very kind of you to say all that.
Yeah, but no, and there's more. He co-founded an event series called Glug in 2007, which is now hosted in, I believe, 35 countries.
Yeah, it is when the pandemic returns, yeah.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. Yeah. And he's currently leading a groundbreaking video games company or game studio called Maze Theory, which is doing some incredible stuff with virtual reality. Plus, he has personally planted, with his own hands, I believe, 4,091 trees.
Yeah, I have with Ecology, and we've done about 12 or 13 million now since we launched as well as a business.
So he's founded a business that plants trees, he offsets carbon in a variety of innovative new ways, including planting trees. And it's planted how many now? 12 to 13 million?
30 million. The amazing thing about that business is took us 9 months to plant the first million trees, and it took us less than 9 days to do the last million.
Really?
And it's just the growth curve on it, because it's a subscription membership. It's like more and more people get on board. I think we'll be planting like a million in a day very soon. It'll be just. So it's, wow. It's quite funny that. Yeah.
Exponential growth. I think that's what they call that.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, listen, you've got a small slice of an overview there of this guy's CV, but I'm going to take you back, Ian. And I want you to tell me, how come you ended up with an office in Beijing?
Oh, Jesus, yeah. Okay, so this is in our Studio Output days. We had a very busy 2011. We actually came off the back of a couple of really boom years. And we bought Found Studio, which I don't think you mentioned, but we own that as well. That's like our video production motion design studio that's all under the Output Group structure. And we were working with those guys, and I'd done a viral film for PlayStation, which was actually one of the rare videos that went viral, organically. It was a thing called Great Films Fill Rooms. It's worth having a look at. It's like early projection mapping. And we got a phone call from some Chinese guy saying, hey, do you want to come and do this? I've seen this video. Do you want to come and do this show in the Bird's Nest in Beijing? And we often get, in agency world, you do often get like sort of inbound inquiries that turn to nothing. But anyway, this one turned into a £1 million deal, basically. Hmm. And go forward 12 months. I was standing in the Bird's Nest with Marcus, who's still my partner now in Maze Theory. Hmm. looking at this stage show, this musical, sci-fi musical stage show. And bear in mind, we'd actually finished the job at this point. And we're both standing there looking at it going, I haven't got a clue what is going on that stage. So we were literally, we didn't know what was going on. It was brilliantly crazy. We went out to China loads of times. I'd not been to China before. It was brilliant to see that side of the culture and everything. And they've just got a different way of doing things. Like they rebuilt the bird's nest out in some village near Beijing because it was cheaper than performing in the bird's nest. So there was like this random village in the middle of nowhere with a fake bird's nest that they'd got that they'd made for the show with 600 people that just the actors and actresses. This was a massive show.
So what was the show? What was this? Is it like actual theater?
It was called Attraction.
Right.
And you may find it online somewhere. And it was just a like sci-fi, science fiction musical thing with crazy projection mapping that we put on. But really, it was very difficult to understand what was going on in it. Anyway, we did that. And it was probably a nice taster of doing business there. And I think at the time, we wanted to look at international offices. And the sensible thing to do would be to do Europe or America. That was the thing that most non-buffoon creative entrepreneurs did. They went, yeah, let's do America or Europe. And we decided that, you know, no, let's do China. And China is tough, really, really tough to do business. So we opened the office there in Beijing the following year. And we kept it for three or four years. And in the end, it folded. And we were doing a lot of work with all the big tech companies out there. But it's just a very hard place to do business. And I would recommend to anyone considering it, well, two things. Either one, you've got to go there yourself. One of you founders has got to go. Or two, you have to find a local regional partner to be a sort of co-founder in the business. Because there's so much stuff to get around and, you know, work your way through that if you haven't got a Chinese partner on board, and you probably need to do both, and we did neither, right? So, you know, became very, very hard. So it was, you know, it was tough in the end. Yeah, we've got some scars from that one.
All right, so things were flying then, weren't they, at that sort of time? The group was creating, so you're out in Beijing, and you were flying out there, weren't you? I remember.
We went out quite regularly. We had a guy called Jim who ran it for us as our MD. We were basically, we'd gone from this crazy year of being like 22 people to 48 to 80 or something people, all independently funded and run. And I think, to be honest, we just had too much on too many fronts. Mm. What happened was, you know, the London business was not doing so well at the time. And then when you added the China business starting to be difficult, it was a little bit, you were robbing Peter to pay Paul and trying to run the business, you know, just a bit too much too quickly, right? And so it led on to a series of years of sort of shrinking things down to where they are now, which is much more sustainable and much more successful and everyone's happier in. I mean, I'm not in it. Maybe the reason it's doing so well now is I left. You know, I'm a shareholder and partner, but I let the guys run that. So
do you think looking back at that then, do you feel that it was a bit of almost overreach?
Yeah, definitely. I think, to be honest, the China thing is just like most businesses will really struggle to grow out there independently. You probably need to go in there with a, like, you know, a networked agency budget and know that it's going to lose money for years and years and years and then be okay, you know. So, and we were just trying to do it on ourselves on a shoestring, so very tough really. So
what do you learn from that, do you think?
Well, the things I said about the partner and going out there yourself, I think, look, and I think the overstretch thing, like, you know, it was just too much really at that point. And I think it was a time when me, Dan and Rob, who own the businesses together, were communicating less well than we have had done. And now we have such a good relationship. Not really down to China, but actually to do with this Quality of Mind program we go on. But Yeah, it was just a bit much, and you know, all pulling in different directions and doing a lot. But yeah, I would say basically China's a little bit like the Wild East in terms of, you know, doing business as a creative business. I still think in 10 years' time, I think I've got a bit of a history, by the way, Dan, I was reflecting, of going a bit early. So I see shiny new things and I go a little bit early, right? So like you could say that when we set up the VR company, which is now, we probably just about got that right, actually, because now the VR market is turning. But when we set up the business, it was in the trough of despair. And everyone going, is this thing going to kick off? And like, obviously, since then, it's been mostly good news. And yeah, I think sometimes I go a bit early with things. I spot things that I think are going to be mainstream earlier than they are. And I think people will go out and do great business in China in the next 10 years. Mm. But we tried to do it 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's interesting that I've done that a lot. Go too early or spot things that to me seem obvious. And I pursue them at a rate of knots. And everyone's really interested in it because it's new. So I spend years telling all about it, but without anybody actually spending any money.
Mm.
And that's a really kind of, yeah, it's a real blessing and a curse all mixed up together. So going back to 2011, then you've got China and the Beijing office hasn't worked out. You've got yourself spread thin. There's various battles being fought, as there are, you know, in a business. And you've got this thing with your business partners, who are fantastic guys, by the way. They're a really great team at Output. And you say you're not communicating that well. I mean, I'm just curious about that, again, because I've had this before with just you're stretched and you're running around. And so could you share a bit more about that aspect? Like, how does that impact, like, the day-to-day?
Well, I think this is now about 2015. Because obviously we'd had China for like 3 years or so, you know. So, and we were basically having to pull out of China and write off like £500,000 of loss or something, you know, like big, yeah, you know, big amount of money for a independent business. And I think me and Dan, I set up Output with Dan and Rob when I was 24. They're a bit older than me, but not like, you know, Rob's about 6 years older than me. And we've done loads of great, we've had a right good journey, to be honest, I think. Dan always says the best thing about working with me in business is that it's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. That's what he said. Doesn't say I'm the best entrepreneur out there, but he says it is a lot of fun. So, and I think he enjoys the adventures, but some of those adventures, we've gone from Nottingham, I set up the London studio, we set up Glog together. We did this, the London studio kicked off. We bought Found, acquired Found, and all of that stuff was going really well. And then obviously but along the way, not just even at the end, but at different points, we've had various things go wrong, right? And you get battle scars from that stuff, right? And you know, sometimes when it's all going wrong, it is just literally, I mean, I think I remember at the time describing it like work was like, getting out of bed, putting on a Kevlar jacket and a helmet, going into the battlefield and just being shat on all the time with bad news, right? And I think the three of us were just there going, you know, it was like one of the things about the three of us, we always, and I think it's a good characteristic, whatever's going wrong, we just get up and go for it and do our best and stuff. But this was a particularly bad time. So, we hadn't been doing this. We do this thing with a guy called Martin Palethorpe, who's my life coach.
Mm.
And it was all about, it's actually about how the mind works. And it's like a retreat. It almost sounds David Cameron-esque. It was like a sort of offsite 2-day thing that we did 3 years ago. And at the time we were hating each other. Like, you know, it was like, I'm trying to think what the expression when you're sort of nice but sort of horrible at the same time. Passive aggressive, right?
Right,
like,
yeah.
That sort of thing. And it really healed us as a three. So yeah, we have a great relationship now, but at the time it was bloody tough and it was like battlefield.
So this was sort of 2015, sort of
2016-ish time, yeah.
But yeah, 16, like late teens.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. So it's all kind of kicking off and you're starting to kick off with each other in a kind of like this passive aggressive way. So when you're in the thick of it, and again, this is the point of this podcast, is kind of like, to be fair, numerous times been in that situation. And, you know, it's like a bleeding stuck record occasionally I find myself, you know. But how are you feeling in the middle of all that? I mean, you kind of like, you're in this Kevlar jacket, you're dodging all the bullets, you've got everything's a bit fractious. What how are you feeling at that point?
I think tired, frustrated, you know. I mean, one of the things I think is interesting about being an entrepreneur and a business owner is people, when I meet them randomly in the pub, think, oh, that's amazing, right? You've got your own business. You can do whatever you want. That is the opposite of what being an entrepreneur is, right? You don't get to hand your notice in. I've never handed my notice in ever, right? You do not get to not show up. Well, not if you want to stay in business. You don't ever, I don't know. It's just, it's way harder than sometimes than being an employee. An employee, if you're not enjoying your job, you just go into the boss and you say, look, actually, I'm going to go find my other thing. As a business owner, if you hand in your notice, say you have 50 people work there, it's quite likely that those 50, if the business craters, they all get made redundant or, you know, move on. So I think it's a bit of a fallacy to say that running a business is about your own freedom and stuff, because it's a mixture of things. But yeah.
Mm. It's straight true. And there's a depth to the responsibility, which I think if you're an ethical person, you feel that depth, right? And obviously you do. So I'm curious, have you ever been employed? So have you ever been an employee?
I got one job, I got sacked.
What was that?
I basically, after uni, I was doing the nightclubs, and then this guy, I think it was called Johnny Moore Promotions, and it was basically sort of promotions, but for him. And I think I might have lasted maybe a month, but I think I was just like still in my 20s, acting like a complete buffoon, going out late, you know, basically living the promoter lifestyle and trying to hold down a job for this guy. And I was a bit shocked when he sacked me because I didn't see it coming. But obviously in hindsight, I was like turning up late, probably drunk, you know, like all the things. And he was like, so I've had that job. I think I'd quite like a job, but no, that is literally, I mean, I've had part-time jobs. I've always worked since my first job was in, I was about 13, and I worked in a Greasy Spoon cafe washing up for 9 hours on a Saturday. Wow. I think I got 15 quid or something. And it's with me and my mate next to each other washing up plates and all sorts of greasy stuff for 9 hours. And I've always had jobs, and I'm always very happy doing jobs. And I think one of the things that grounds me about life is, I think, however bad it gets, I'm actually quite happy painting and quite happy doing, I'd be a crap builder, but I'll do anything else. And how bad can it get? So
it's funny. I read on an interview, I think in Design Week, you'd spoken about this 9 hours in the Greasy Spoon washing up. And it's funny because my first job was washing up at a restaurant. And I remember I was 15 and it was 1 a.m. or something. And usually you're finished by 11. And my mum phoned up saying, is he still alive? You know, like I was still plowing through the plates. But it's funny, as you're talking, and you're talking about the kind of Kevlar jacket and under fire and the kind of grinding it out bit, there is something to that, like the grinding it out of the day-to-day, like foxhole fight of entrepreneurship. And the people that can survive that are those that can just keep going. The kind of, there's a resilience bit there, yeah. I think, which is really important for, well, new entrepreneurs to really grasp, because that's the thing that keeps you going 20 years later, you know, which it is now. I think it was 2002, wasn't it? You founded Output.
Mm. Yeah, so that'll be coming up too. I'm just thinking about what you said. I think maybe business is easier than we think, because basically it's a mixture of grinding out, turning up every day and working hard and doing your best, right? One. And then the rest is like luck, right? It's like hitting the right thing at the right time, you know, like, and you're obviously making your own luck. But if I look at my situation right now, and maybe it doesn't feel like this day to day sometimes, But I am actually very lucky to be riding two of the biggest waves out there at the moment. One in this sort of immersive entertainment digital space, VR gaming and gaming. Like, it's booming because of the pandemic and everything else and stuff. That's just luck, right? I picked it 2 years ago at probably a really bad time, and then things have changed. And then the other business I'm really involved in is ecology and the whole green revolution. Well, it's the number one thing that needs fixing on the planet, right? So, and I don't think I picked those two things because I thought, oh yeah, in 2 years, they'll be really riding on there, you know? So I do think it is that mixture of showing up, determination, plus a bit of luck along the way.
Yeah, it's like you got to be in the game, you know, and the luck presents itself, but you got to be in the game. And it's funny because I don't think I could be employed now. And I've kind of got used to the game somewhat. And I'm just curious to see, like, how, so you're in a, I guess, I've been doing this, well, being self-employed for 20 years this year, and you're, let's call it 20 years in. So how do you cope with all that, all those shifting sands and competing pressures and risks and stuff?
I think it's got more high stakes in the last 5 years than before. And basically, I've been very lucky that in those 5 years, I found a life coach that taught me to think about my mind and thoughts and stuff. So I buy into this thing called the Insights Principles, which is basically all around. So I went on that journey and it helped make me realize that life is a game, right? We're all just waves in the ocean. To be honest, the thing, without getting too philosophical, like, if you do actually ever think your life's going really badly, if you realize how infinitesimally small you are in the scheme of the universe now, but in time as well, that definitely tends to reset me to realizing how unimportant my life and the things are. And then life is play, right? Then life is play.
Yeah, I'm going to pull you on that because I think you can get philosophical here. Let's get philosophical, because funnily enough, I agree with the philosophical bit of what you're saying, because one of the things I've realized in sort of my big crash in 2017, the thing that saved me and has actually turned my life around is the philosophy of life, call it, which sounds very highfalutin, but like, really how you approach your life, how you set your mind, your mindset, is the number one thing that's turned my life around. And I'm, you know, but it's funny, people don't see that. People talk about the skills or the money or the this or the that. And it's really interesting. You picked up on the fact that your mindset, the way you approach your thinking, your philosophy is the thing that's helped you most. And can you unpack what exactly about that has helped you most?
Okay. So I guess on that journey of understand, there's a great book, The Invisible Power, that it would start you on that journey. And then with the work with Martin that I've done, it's made me realize I believe in sort of some sort of spirituality between science and I'm not religious at all, but you know, somewhere in between the two is something I believe in. And and what his big teaching is everyone is just making it up in their head, right? So my existence is just my thoughts, 60,000 of them, bubbling over and over in my head. And me and you think we're on the same page right now, but we're not on the same page because you've got your own fake reality going on. And everyone has got that fake reality. And it's like the Truman Show, and everyone's that. And then you look into it, and there's loads of different techniques and all that different stuff. But ultimately, life is play, and nothing really matters. Even climate change, which is hideous, right? If climate change happens and we all die, the planet will go on, right?
Yeah, 100%.
When you sort of, and then the planet in the universe is nothing, you know, as well. So running a VR business and the trials and tribulations of that will not go down in the annals of the universe of, like, you know, so. I think, but I suppose I can be like that as well because of one other thing, which is that my family life is really strong and happy. And so, you know, it's very easy to be philosophical if I'm not going to get booted out and have to live on the streets, right? So, you know, it's that mixture of those two things that helps me go. And I think the one thing that's amazing about realizing that you're living in your own bubble and it's all just a game is that once you realize that, then life is play and you just have to do your best, right? And in the moment, you do the best, you're in flow, you try and work it out, and inevitably it goes much better than when you've got all these fears and concerns going on in your head about what's going to go wrong and all the different stuff. A lot of the time, the fears are the things holding you back. So,
yeah, 100%. It's so true. Like, funnily enough, the last few years, well, particularly this last year, I read a book called The Artist's Way, which I'd highly recommend, particularly with what you've just said about your spiritual side evolving, and particularly to do with letting go. Right, the book is all about unblocking creativity. Hmm. I'm telling you, this book is magic. Right, I mean, seriously, I can't quite tell you how profound the difference I am in my relationship with the outside world after reading this book. Basically, kind of what you're saying: stop, just let it go. Just go with it. Trust the sort of universe, sort of ask it for things, and then get out of the way. Like, get your ego out of the way and let it kind of channel through you. Which sounds, I appreciate, a bit woo-woo. But I'm telling you now, after 20 years of running a business,
I'm full woo-woo. Don't worry.
I'm fully into it.
Number one thing I have to do is just try not to let my ego get in the way.
Yeah, you know, that's
like the thing that stops me more than anything else. So
where's your ego got in the way before?
Well, I suppose ego. It's also about thought and about yourself and thoughts about where you are and how you should be valued and respected and everything like that.
Mm.
And it's just quite actually in business, you don't need egos. You just need the right person in the right seat doing the right thing, right? So actually ego, the problem with ego is that you could be in a seat which you think, oh, you know, I know I need to be the person. And actually in a lot of these high growth businesses, they're actually looking for right stage expertise. I actually think that my expertise is like in the seeds of an idea up to 20 to 30 people, right? The fun of the startup and all. And I know, I know someone that will help us with this and blah, blah, blah. So I reckon that, like, you know, and the danger with that ego is perhaps when you get to, say one of my business gets to 100 people or 200 people, I'm not the right person anymore. But ego could make you think that you are. And in those businesses, I probably should be a shareholder, not the CEO, maybe. So I'm learning that recently.
When you say recently, how recently?
Maybe the last 6 months. I'm starting to realize that more, that it's like, it's fine to get out of the way. Like I say, output and found absolutely flying since I'm not involved. But I left about 2 or 3 years ago, and not all of that. It hasn't been an instant. Look, there you go. There's my ego getting involved already. Like, oh, no, it's not just because of me. you know.
Look, there's a graph, and it was going down. Now it's going up. So I'm just saying. Listen, I'm 100% with you.
Actually, you know what? The weirdest thing is when you think about that, that would be the ultimate, right? To own businesses, set them up, leave them, they do better without you being involved. That's like the ultimate retirement plan, isn't it? Right? It's just like, so, but yet you fight that, right? You're like, I'm the man, I've got to be involved, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, get the fuck out.
Oh my God, I'm slightly flushing as you're talking. Because it's a bit uncomfortable. It's a real. I got to tell you, it's so funny. Like, ego and its relationship with your design.
Okay, have a look at this. This will make you laugh. So, my wife thinks this is really, really lame and crap, right, of me. But I have these postcards that I printed out during lockdown.
I'm going to read this out for the audience. You can't see the screen. Ego is your enemy. Full stop.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not very good at grammar.
I think that's a very good place to put the full stop, because it is.
We've got this one. We've got try your best, which actually is probably my number one recommendation, because you can't do much better than that. I've got about four of them all around the room to remind me to stop being such a twat. So, yeah.
It's funny, I have, it's not the same thing, but similar things dotted around my room. I have a post-it note on my window as I'm leaving this room. It says, "What would a healthy person do?" Because generally what I do is start eating biscuits as soon as I leave the room. So I'm trying to I'm trying to remind myself of these things.
Yeah, this is great.
I'll tell you, because this is a thing that you've got to, it takes 20 years to learn that you're the problem or your ego is the problem, and you've just described a whole load of you've had an amazing career with amazing businesses, all of which are flourishing or have the potential to be.
I need to pick you up on that. Some of them are not, have cratered and or done badly. I've had a fun career of doing stuff and I'm not finished yet.
Yeah. My point really in that is to say, look, in all of that, is that a billion battles and billion things that have been butting your head against the wall. But it's taken 20 years of doing that to get to this realization about your own ego.
Yeah. And there's a great book that comes to mind, actually, called Servant Leadership, I think it's called. I don't know if you read it, but that one is fabulous. It's the story of this guy that goes on a retreat and gets taught by a monk, and it's really, really good because it basically teaches you that leadership is not about being the main guy telling people what to do. Leadership is about building other people up to be brilliant, right? And being not the main guy. I definitely recommend that one for anyone listening.
Okay. So you've had, there's loads of good stuff in there. And there's a whole bunch of stuff I'd like to explore, but I'm very intrigued to ask you about when you left the sort of running of Output Group, because this is obviously your baby. You've taken it from Nottingham to London to Beijing, back again, all over the place. This incredible CV of case studies of projects at the highest level. And you up and leave. And I guess from the outside in, people in design or creative industries might go, "What are you doing?" So what?
I reckon I should have left earlier, actually. To be honest. Yeah. I think, I fell into that agency world. I'm just basically someone that enjoys creative business, right? And I fell into it off the back of running nightclubs and everything else with Dan and Rob. And Dan and Rob are brilliant at running that business, and that's why they stay in it, right? Whereas me, I was the sales marketing business guy that did loads of hats over I'm quite creative. So at one point I was the bloody creative director, which is nuts because, as my wife says, I can barely dress myself. So how the hell can I, I did that when we were all joint creative directors and all that stuff. But really, I should probably have left earlier. I think at the time it wasn't the appropriate thing. There was a few years in there where no one had the right to leave because it was just so hard. And we did that as a team. And, I've got massive respect for those guys for what we went through together and fixed. And it's amazing now. I get an update, shareholders update. And it's just you're doing brilliantly. Great. We all came out of it when we did the split, and we basically all owned a third of each other's businesses, and we've just got this amazing trust about the way that we all run them. And we know that we're all doing the best, and some might go brilliantly and some might go tits up and some might be somewhere in the middle. And in that new sense of trust, it's really good. So yeah, I left three years ago now, three-ish years ago. I think the weirdest thing is now I think I spent 15 years in that business, and actually I think I'd have preferred to have done more businesses in that time, to be honest. And now I look at it and go, I'd like to do maybe a lot more before I'm done. So
when you say do businesses, what do you mean by that?
Set them up, run them, give them a go, put together. I mean, the thing that I really like about businesses is talent and finding talented people and making their dreams come true, right? And Marcus is the reason that we set up Maze, because he's just an exquisite storytelling, animating, coding genius. And that's why we set up Maze, right? And now we've got this pretty crazily big 40-person business that's kicking out games and doing great work. And I love that element of it, seeing people get to do what they want.
So how would you describe yourself now?
I think my leadership styles are much better. There's far less ego, and there's a lot more honesty and vulnerability. You know, I think that's an amazing tip for getting people to help you. It's just be like really honest. So I'm having a really difficult day, and you know, this is a real problem, and like I need to tell you about it, and I'm struggling with it. That's an amazing conversation starter, as opposed to sitting someone down and telling them what you need them to do. No one buys into that. So that has definitely changed my style.
But I'm going to call you on that, because I think you've been quite like that naturally all the way through. Like, I remember meeting you years and years ago, and you spill your guts about the way things were. And, you know, I guess, like, often people do, but I think you have that. And
maybe we did that as equals running businesses, but I wouldn't always do that with everyone. And now I literally will do that vulnerability with everyone. I do a thing at Maze, which I love and hate, which is a monthly ask me anything thing. The bastards are meant to send me the messages on Slack before, so I'm slightly prepped, but no one does. And then they just literally call me out on questions. I just sit there taking the questions about stuff, and then don't know where it's going to go. But I sort of trust in being honest and not having to be guarded. And I think people love it.
I like that. This is what you've just said there, trust in being honest. Great. Put that on a card.
I think I've probably got something.
I'm going to put one in my room. But I like, this comes back to my artist way book, trusting in being honest, like actually trusting in it. Yeah. And that's a commitment. It's courageous commitment, that, because you don't know how it's going to pan out when you tell the actual honest truth.
No, you definitely don't. You don't. Everyone's just trying their best. I was listening to the a podcast yesterday with the guy that owns Timpsons, you know,
the key and boot fitting, you know.
And he runs all of his shops with, you know, people, and he has no rules, because he says, like, just let them trust that they're going to do the best. And he said he learned that from being the son of the boss, because every shop he went to, he doubled the turnover of the shop, right? And he realized the reason was because no one questioned him, because he was the boss's son. And he just basically told the warehouse, I want to do this, and I'm going to give this away free. And his story was just like, you know, he realized that no one comes to work to follow the rules, you know, to do bad, right? Everyone is trying to do their best in the right culture. So you just have to trust people and be honest with them, I think. And it may or may not work out. But it's got a hell of a lot more chance of working out if you trust people.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's the thing about being honest, and I've realized that you've got to be honest with yourself first. And do you think, going back to the output days, do you think you said you would have left earlier? Do you think that was because you hadn't got this kind of clarity in the relationship?
I think, well, like I say, the years when I was probably getting a bit bored or, you know, wanting to do something else, were the years when we were in the trenches, and therefore it didn't, my sort of integrity to not leave the guys was a conflict, right, between that. But in the end, I think we just had a conversation where I said, I don't really want to do this. And they said, yeah, that's fine, we know. And it was all solved within about 6 months. So, you know.
Wow. So again, that's an interesting little vignette, because it comes down to just fessing up. There's truth telling.
Yeah. And just like, I mean, if you go back to the point about we all live in our own fake realities, the only way to solve that is to regularly talk honestly with people, so that you basically go back to the same level where you have better communication, where you do understand how your different minds are working, right? And I think particularly at the moment when we're all remote working in, that is even worse, right? Imagine the hang-ups and the thoughts that you're having about employees that are just made up in your own head every day. I have to call myself out on it all the time. Ian, he didn't even say that. What are you talking about? You know, like, So I don't know if you have that, but I do.
Yeah, I'm getting better at catching that. And the sort of fantasy, you're right. There is something quite poetic, actually, about a man who's just realizes that it's all just a fake reality, running a company that's about creating fake realities.
Yeah, well, like, exactly. That's just layers within layers of the onion, isn't it, right?
Well, it is all a massive virtual reality session, basically. They're just playing a little game with your narrative, your sort of subplot narrative, I believe.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. No. So one's ego, mind, chimp will be constructing narratives about this person, that person, this customer, that supplier, the future. None of which are necessarily real, and it all comes from kind of the impressions that you're getting. And like you say, via Zoom, those impressions are compromised deeply. And just like the facial expression thing, you know how people communicate through how their eyes squint and your little facial gestures, and you just can't see it. And what this is the big thing I find stressful about Zoom calls is trying to pick up on the cues. And that saps my energy, just, you know, for what it's worth.
Mm. But I think it's tough. There's so many great things about remote working. And I'd almost say they're probably 50-50 in terms of positives and negatives, right? Mm. But you've just got to be really aware of what, how much stuff is going on in your head and or other people's head around miscommunication as a result.
Right. We're coming up towards the end of our podcast time.
Yeah.
So I did find this Design Week interview with you from 2017, which now I know a bit more was smack bang in the time when you were Kevlar jacketing it. So this makes it even more interesting, this quote. So you said every failure is a challenge.
I probably said, oh, we're doing brilliant. Yeah, everything's great. We're all brilliant. Couldn't be better. Thanks, mate.
just to save you reading it, that was the first two-thirds of the interview. But you said, quote, some of the hardest times I've had have taught me the most.
Yeah.
So what was your hardest time and what did it teach you? And be honest.
Oh, no. I have a career littered with failure, right? Some of them are small. Some of them are things I've got wrong, you know. I did do one business with two of my really close mates, and it was a disaster. It was called this thing called Fingertips, right? And it was basically... It was like this, it sucked. It was like the news you choose was what it was called, right? And it basically sucked in an RSS feed and it was basically like Google, the Google News before Google News existed. Going back to my thing about, getting into things about 10 years before they were a thing, right? So it was one of them. But one of the things that was so bad is it wasn't even an area I had any knowledge in, right? So, and I think that's a big thing to think about is like be a bit careful about getting into businesses that you just don't know anything about unless you've got amazing sort of analytics and research capabilities. So, we did it for about 2 years in and around work. We were getting up at like five in the morning to do it before work and after work. And, you know, I think Dan and Rob weren't particularly pleased because they were like, what the hell is this other business you're doing on the side? And it was just shit and it didn't work. And like, we had no traction. And I think like a big learning from that is like, you should have an idea, you should try it, you should go for it, but you should also learn to know when to see the signs that it's not working and get out.
How do you know how to see the signs though?
Well, I mean, this literally no one was even, you know, there was like hundreds of people logging in a year in. So I think, you probably need really good data points that are really not biased by, you know, not biased data points and all that stuff. You should give it a go for a certain chunk of time. I think the Simpson guy was saying yesterday, like, you know, he throws money at things for a while. And he has no problem with throwing money at things and learning lessons for a while. And then he says, this isn't working anymore and gets out. And I think not getting out soon enough is a problem for some people. Mm-hmm. And I definitely think it's a problem for me, right? So
this is an, do you know how ego thing played into that?
Oh, massively. Yeah, totally. 100%. Probably, I can't have a failed business thing.
Would be a thing. So what was going through your mind then when you were, it was probably apparent, but you were wrestling with
I didn't want to let down, there was a small investor involved. I didn't want to let her down and, you know, didn't want to let my friends down and pride and all that stuff. And actually, like, that is just horseshit, right? certainly the pride element. I still have investors in my current business, and it is on my mind that they have trusted in me to do something great. And so that doesn't go away, that bit, right? But the bit about myself and my own self-thought and worth, that is just a crock of crap. When I die, people are not going to remember fingertips, or, you know, maybe I should get that on my gravestone just as a real sucker punch.
The founder of Fingertips.
Yeah, exactly. And then in brackets, what?
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. Well, that's really, I mean, Ian, you're a legend in many, many ways, but always sort of have a great conversation with you, and always, it's always like straight at it. And I think that's what we've done today. So thank you so much for sharing.
Oh, no, pleasure.
And I think this is going to help a lot of people, because, you know, you can kind of look at this people's careers from the outside in, and it's just sort of a list of all the glory points. But it's a struggle, all that. And I think that's really good of you and kind of you to open up so much about that, because it helps. I think anybody who's on that path just know they're not on their own struggling with their day to day stuff.
Don't worry. It's quite cathartic, I think. Because I mentor someone at the moment, and I agreed to do it as a bit of a, like, I've done it quite a bit, and I agreed to do it. And then about halfway through, I've realized that actually I'm doing most of it for myself, because I'm there going, yeah, I've got this great tip about trying your best. I'm like, and it's a reminder to myself. So I think it's always good to do this stuff, because it reminds you about, you know, resetting and stuff.
Yeah, that's a good shout. Right, the last question I'm going to ask you is the question I like to ask people. Is you know, if you're a new entrepreneur, or you're in business and you're going out for the first, you know, the early parts of your career, there's so much advice now online and on social media for entrepreneurs. So what advice do you think they should ignore?
Oh, Jesus, ignore. I'd actually go the other way if I can. And I don't mean to dodge the question, but I think I would actually go more along, trust your instincts, try and do your best. I know that's what you'd say to a child, but actually being in business is not that far different. You know, you wake up, you do your best every day. Don't let your ego get in the way. Enjoy, work should be fun. Have fun, right? Do your best and, like, make the most of it, because you only get one life. So you may as well do that. And don't take it too seriously. A lot of it might be down to luck, right? You think about some of these billionaires, right? The billionaires, social media guys, some of the things they probably started, they're probably just down to, like, oh, I've done another thing, and that was the thing that blew up, right? And it could have been random. So I'd go down that route of just, I wouldn't think about what to avoid. I'd just think about looking inwardly and seeing what you can do.
And that's great advice. And making it fun, plus one on that. I'm a big believer in, if it's not fun, then don't do it. You know, it's life's too short. So that's fantastic. Ian, as always, great to see you. Hopefully see you in real life soon. And a big love to the family. And I'll see you later, mate. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me on. That's been great. Cheers, mate.
Take care. Bye. Right.
If you want to receive the top 5 tidbits, the nuggets, the insights from each episode in your inbox every week, head up to honeyibluupthebusiness.com. Yes, the snappily titled honeyibluupthebusiness.com, and enter your email address, and we're going to get the best bits, we're going to collate them together, and we're going to send them to you, so you don't have to write them down when listening to the podcast. Yes, nice and easy. So get up there, enter your email address, get the tips, all good. And I've got to say before I go that this podcast is generously supported by my company, The Tech Department. Thank you, guys. They are indulging me as I'm pursuing this little creative project. If you want to find a company that helps make your technology better, so that gets your business better as well, head up to thetechdept.com. So on behalf of everybody here, thanks for listening. See you next time.